Hello, and welcome to the Altman Fellows Podcast, a public humanities project for Miami University's Humanities Center. My name is Avery Komar, and I am one of six undergraduate Altman Fellows for the 2019 to 2020 school year. As part of the Altman Lecture Series on Time and Temporality, we have interviewed various experts in an attempt to illuminate interdisciplinary perspectives on the nature of time, how we think about it, and our place within it. This is a special compilation episode addressing one issue that we believed was the most salient and which resonated throughout all of our interviews. We therefore chose to put our guests into conversation with one another through their responses to the following question. As undergraduate students and as young people, how do you think we and our peers have a responsibility to think about time and temporality? Most of the responses contained the same fundamental theme. Young people and people in general have to be aware of a longer timeline than the week-to-week, month-to-month rhythms of everyday life. Some speakers emphasize that this type of temporal awareness is increasingly difficult in the age of the internet, where information is superseded by the next story within a matter of minutes. Other speakers pointed out that long-term thinking will be a necessary survival skill in light of impending climate disaster. Dr. Jonathan Crary, Meyer Shapiro Professor of Modern Art and Theory at Columbia University, and Dr. Jack Halberstam, Professor of English and Comparative Literature, also at Columbia, pointed out the way in which technology has caused time to speed up. Specifically, we asked Dr. Crary to comment on the elements of time that our generation should be conscious of, given that we were born into a world in which the internet was already a prominent part of everyday life. Dr. Crary emphasized the importance of engaging with the internet selectively rather than mindlessly.
I think that you have a duty to yourself to think about what are the priorities that you have for the way in which you want to live your life. And, you know, I would hope that if you really were thinking about what are the different external kind of limitations or privations that you would want to, you know, wherever it was possible. I mean, obviously there's so many kind of externalities that are irresistible at this point. You know, you can't live without an email. If you know, there are probably many other kinds of examples. But the internet, the basic thing is, I was using that phrase, that casual phrase, here to stay, and nothing is here to stay. And in fact, some of the people that I'm reading on sort of technological shifts, I mean, you don't even have to read specialists. You can kind of pick it up that the internet is going to become something very different.
Dr. Crary emphasized that the internet does not rely on an immaterial infrastructure, and that just like every other type of infrastructure, it is subject to decline and decay. It is therefore doubly important that the internet generation be conscious of timelines that do not begin and end with the refreshing of a social media feed.
I think it's important that your generation be very attentive to some of those impending transformations and reconfigurations and ways in which you're able to see alternative possibilities.
Dr. Halberstam also focused on the impact of the internet on our relationship with time. He began by discussing his own generation's relationship with the past.
For people of my age, I'm in my late 50s, I grew up in England in a post-war period, and people were deeply, deeply preoccupied with the past. Like, you know, in my childhood, there were few conversations that didn't somehow run back through that material. Like in England in the 60s, people still rationed food and had air raid shelters in their backyard. And as I was saying yesterday, cities had not been cleaned up yet after the bombings that they underwent during the war. So you were steeped in the past, really. And you could say that this generation now is steeped in the future.
Then Dr. Halberstam explained the way in which social media transforms our relationship with the past and with time.
You have people who live their whole lives online where the past is literally 5 minutes ago because so much happens. Like, right, if you're on a Twitter feed and something's happening and it's like boom, 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 and you come off of your online visit and so much has happened in that 2-hour period that if someone asks you about last year, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you don't really even, you can't even think in those terms anymore. We've compressed temporality. So much happens in a minute. Like, we went from having news at 6 o'clock in the evening to a 24-hour news feed. Do you see? So when you amass all of this information, like on a daily basis, minute by minute, the past is just, it's an impossible archive to retrieve. So I think that we're in a generational, in an accelerationist, you know, moment where we feel as if everything is speeding up, and where our relationship to an imaginable past is disappearing.
Other guests commented on the impact of climate change on our relationship with time. Dr. Marcia Bjornerud, a geologist at Lawrence University, used the term temporal literacy to emphasize the importance of thinking in the long term in the face of climate change. She pointed to civic engagement and personal responsibility as the most important elements of temporal literacy.
Well, I have kids in their 20s too, so I care deeply about this, and all I can say is don't lose heart. I mean, we have to be optimistic that change is possible, and it'll be incremental, probably, but over time, as geology has shown us, small incremental changes do add up. So I think people need to be engaged as individuals, certainly as voters, need to think about whatever your career path is it contributing in the right direction? We all need to make hard decisions. We need to make a living. But think about how your own particular vocational choices are making a difference. You know, simple things, it's seemingly simple. One of the biggest decisions you can make is how close to your workplace you live. And for a lot of people, that's not easy. If you live in a large metropolitan area, housing prices are absolutely insane, but that, you know, the daily commute of 45 minutes every day for 30 to 35 years in your individual car, that's a moral choice you're making. So there, as individuals, we can be reflective about how our small choices do incrementally add up to bigger things, and then we need to find mechanisms to collectivize and make our individual voices more, you know, broadly heard.
Dr. Matthew Bertner, professor of music at the University of Virginia and environmentalist composer, also emphasized long-term thinking is an important form of defense against climate change. He pointed to indigenous concepts of family as central to their ability to coexist sustainably with the natural environment.
So I would say there's like two places to look. The indigenous knowledge and science. So indigenous knowledge, because the people who have lived in a sustainable relationship with the natural world have done that for thousands of years, and they've developed, you know, cycles of life that follow the patterns, the larger patterns of time outside of the, you know, the human scale or human wishes. They're following, you know, animal migration cycles, you know, tidal cycles, like just changes that are in the environment that they've observed, and they also have a very kind of, a lot of these the cultures have, you know, strong family continuity, so they don't think in terms of like the individual lifespan. I mean, they do, but it's connected to like the rest of their family and then generations before. So one person is not an island in the world, but rather, you know, is in connection with, you know, his grandma and with, you know, her father, and, you know, going back, and they know that, they think about that, they think about the, like, the line of culture. And when you start stringing together human lives, then you start approaching like scales of time that are meaningful in the environment. One human life can kind of slip by, you know. Sure, just you know, throw your trash around, and maybe it's not going to pile up by the time you die too much. You can probably get through, you know. But if you actually think like, well, then my children are going to have to live there and they're going to have to deal with my piles of trash and, you know, my grandparents left their piles of trash and now I'm like living in that, you know, it's, if you start thinking of the longer scale of time, it changes the way you live in the world. So that part I think is really important with temporality. It's again kind of like imagining becoming comfortable with a scale of time outside of a single person's day-to-day, month-to-month life.
In contrast to the other speakers, Dr. Peng Chia emphasized the role that everyday temporal minutiae can play in disrupting the organization of time on a broader scale. Undergraduate students pay close attention to this advice. Dr. Chia, a professor of rhetoric at the University of California, Berkeley, discourages showing up to class on time.
I mean, you have to start where you are. You have to think about how a given regime of time affects you in your daily life. I mean, and that's the starting point. Then the question is, what are the political ramifications, the political consequences that follow from your following this temporal regime? Like, you could be perverse and say, I don't want to wake up when I'm supposed to wake up. I don't want to go to this class when it starts at 9 a.m. I decide I want to go at 9:30 a.m. What if you showed up for a class that starts at 9 a.m., but you show up at 9:30? You're not being a bad student. You could be conscientiously doing your work, right? But what if you show up at 9:30 consistently every day of the class? What would happen? What would your teachers think? Right? I mean, are they going to dock your grade? But then you're doing the work, right? But you can see even little acts like that, how they could potentially be disruptive. I mean, you know, is this the teacher going to say, the professor going to say, you're not showing up at 9, you're showing up at 9:30, you're a bad student. On the other hand, you're consistently doing the work, you're producing the work. So being a bad student doesn't mean the work that you do is of poor quality, it means you're not showing up at the right time, right? So it's, I mean, just little things like that, I think that, you know, you can imagine how infrastructural a temporal regime is to the way that you lead your daily lives in quite a material way. You know, that, I mean, you know, in the humanities, we have these grand sounding phrases like heteronormative time, heteronormative temporality, queer temporality. But all this stuff that I'm talking about is actually very, very basic. You know, showing up somewhere the same time, setting your a clock the same time every morning so that you wake up, knowing when to call someone, and so on and so forth. But just think, I mean, how much actually hinges on all these small, minute, material details that structure your daily life. That if you decide not to do this, if you decide, I'm not going to say disobey or disrupt, right? But if you just throw a little kink into this whole machine, and you don't have to be a bad person or a perverse person to do it, you know, what would actually happen? And if everyone started doing it, what would actually happen, right? And that means taking time seriously.
Dr. Janan Ismail, a professor of philosophy at Columbia University, succinctly reinforced the importance of long-term thinking in the contemporary moment.
So one of the things that you really need to do that our, you know, previous generations, including mine, haven't done very well, is to think in terms of the long now. So not the immediate future, but, you know, a much longer sort of time mark. So the big existential issues are things like climate change, maybe worries about the ethics of computers and robots and AI. Those, you know, I think we're not really built for thinking in terms of that. We certainly don't do it well. We don't seem to be built for thinking in terms of the long-term future. We tend to respond most to immediately present dangers. So I think that's going to be something that your generation is going to have to do just purely as a matter of survival.
Thank you for listening to the final episode of the Joffrey and Undergraduate Fellows Time and Temporality Podcast. We would like to thank the Humanities Center at Miami University for making all of this possible, and we would like to thank our guest speakers once again for taking the time to speak with us. To hear more of the insights of all of the speakers featured today, please check out the other episodes of our podcast featuring individual interviews with each guest.